This is Just Talking It Up with Janet and Crash.
Well, hello again. We are Just Talking It Up. I'm Janet. I'm here with my buddy Crash, and we're glad you're here. And I'm glad I'm here with my buddy Crash. How are you, Crash?
I'm doing well. Always good to be with you, Janet. Things are popping in the world, and it's always good to be able to talk about that.
Hey, listen, are you a bike rider?
Well, let's see. Last time I rode a bicycle was probably 25 years ago. But yes, I'm a bike rider. I can ride a bike. But
so it was one of those things where it had the giant wheel in the front, and you had like a little tiny mustache and a little top hat or something.
It's not a unicycle, and both wheels on the last one that I rode were the same size. How's that?
So have you watched those little wiry, all of them look like Barney Fife guys riding the bikes in the Tour de France and all those commercials?
Yeah, it's zero body fat or 3% body fat, and you think it's almost like watching a NASCAR race. You wonder which one's going to turn his wheel wrong, and you're going to have about a 40 yeah,
Right. Everybody wants to see a crack up. But, I look at those guys and I'm thinking, if there was a mountain lion or some other kind of a predator that was starving to death and saw those things riding by, I don't think he'd take a single one of them because he's looking at him saying, that'd be really stringy. That'd be kind of tough. I think I'm going to let that one go.
Exactly right. I could pick my teeth of those bones, but there's no teeth on this bone.
I might use one of those for some floss afterwards, but that's about it. Hey, listen, Tour de France has stripped Lance Armstrong. Finally, might I add, the creep. I'm glad he survived cancer. That's wonderful. But come on, the guy's been doping. And for a long time, and it's so sophisticated. So he's finally been stripped of all of his titles, and he's banned for life. What do you think?
You know, it's amazing that he went as long as he did. If the problem was as pervasive as it seems to be, and it involved as many people as it seems to have involved, how in the world did he keep people quiet this long? Because these were people at the very top of this profession, and all of them knew what was going on, and they fell in line right behind him. So it's hard to understand how he kept those people under control for that long.
Was he like known as a big gift giver, or did he send people on elaborate vacations, or?
I don't know about that. He had this foundation where he's raised about $500 million for cancer for children.
Yeah, so but he didn't use that for personal use, did he?
As far as I know, I haven't seen that that's the case. As a matter of fact, the people in his foundation are still supporting him fairly much across the board, I guess.
No.
Well, yeah, they are. But, I think what they're saying, under their breath, they've got to say, hey, this is $500 million, and we still are in control of that.
But this is a guy who was lying and cheating for however many years, 12 years. How many years was he riding in these things and winning them and doping every time and swearing that he wasn't? That's like trusting a cheating husband again without being just a little bit suspicious. I think I would at least get the board together and say, guys, if we're gonna keep this money going where it needs to go, and that is for cancer research and whatever good things are doing, we need to all band together and kick him to the curb and keep the organization, maybe rename it, maybe... I'd get on that like stink on a dog.
Okay, well now let's think of what you just said. Number one, I think the first win he had was in 1999. If I'm not mistaken, he won seven in a row or something like that. And he came back from cancer, came back from retirement two or three times. So it was a fairly significant type thing that he did. But now the second thing is, are you telling me that you're surprised that there's graft and corruption in something like that, and that people will lie to cover up other lies? Have you been watching the news lately? I mean, it's pervasive over the entirety of our society. So this is here.
All right, it's nothing new. But when we see it, there is something compelling. Surely to goodness, there's something good in us that it compels us to do something about it. We can't just say, "Well, it's everywhere. Everybody lies. Everybody cheats. Everybody dopes."
Well, if you want to look at sports, there's so many things that come to the forefront when you mention that. Look at Roger Clemens. He lied to the grand jury, and he lied to Congress, lied to his wife, Now he's back playing baseball, and they'll probably talk about putting him in the Hall of Fame sometime. I mean,
who was the baseball guy? Was it Pete Rose, the one that was it gambling, caught in the gambling thing?
He was gambling, and they wouldn't
put him in, an incredible baseball player who did something that everybody does, but never tried to physically, chemically do something different to his body and secretly hide it. I don't remember exactly what the details were of that scandal. That was so many years ago.
Yeah, he was betting on baseball, and he was betting on his own team, I don't think there was ever a case where he bet against his own team.
Did he throw a game or anything?
No, never threw a game as far as any of the records show.
Well, see, to me, that's a scandal.
If you go back to the Black Sox scandal of the early 1900s.
Here we go. Yeah, get on your great big bike.
Well, I remember it well. I remember
watching Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Hey, by the way, do you have any idea where Shoeless Joe Jackson is buried, just since you brought that up?
No, I do not.
Is buried in Greenville, South Carolina. And people love Shoeless Joe. It was never proven, really, that Shoeless Joe threw the games. Matter of fact, he hit something like 370 in that series and made great plays. So if you look at that, he probably got the rawest deal that you could ever see in being banned from baseball. But
is that why he's so famous? Is that why the name Shoeless Joe is so famous?
Well, he's famous for a number of reasons. One, he was a great baseball player, and two was the Black Sox scandal. Number two, and number three, his name is Shoeless Joe. So, I mean, all those things go together. It makes for great baseball lore.
I wonder what those guys would think. I wonder what they did to make their game better. That in those days, the commission might have said, "I'm not sure that that's right." I wonder if any of them had corked bats, or is that when all that stuff started? Where you
corked bats started a little bit later than that. But if you want to go back to the Shoeless Joe issue, what they did to solve that problem was put in a strong leader named Kennesaw Mountain Landis. And he came in and was a pretty strong leader in terms of a baseball commissioner. And at that point, they gave the baseball commissioner pretty much strength to do whatever he wanted to do, even though he's employed by the owners, or he is an employee of the owners. He does have almost total authority. You can go right down the line to the guy named Bart Giamatti, who was the one who put the quietus on Pete Rose. Those guys have had very, very strong capabilities to do what they wanted to do. And in NFL was the same thing. Pete Rozelle was able to do the same thing. And the current guy is coming up in the NFL is coming under some fire where he doesn't have quite the power. He's exercised the power, but there have been legal restraints, and he's had to go back and undo some things that he did. We're talking about the most recent issue where the New Orleans Saints had what they called meat wagon rules, which means that if you want to make sure that you do something to have a player carried off on the meat wagon, I mean, I want to hurt them, and you get paid money if you hurt them. And the coach of the New Orleans Saints was banned from coaching in the NFL for an entire year. Now the New Orleans Saints are, I think, 1-6 or 1-5, so it shows that coach was pretty strong. But they also have a linebacker named Vilma, who has been banned, and he has sued the chairman or the head of the NFL, and it's kind of in the courts. He's continued to assert his strength, but you're not sure whether he's going to be able to hold that entire year banning of this one guy. He's made a big issue out of it, and they're bringing some legal cases against the NFL. But this is rampant. I mean, you know, very quickly we got back to the early 1900s with Joe Jackson and Pete Rose, and you've got Bill Belichick from the New England Patriots, who it was found that he was bugging the practices of the other team, and he was listening to the sideline mics of the other team, and all of a sudden that thing went away. Nothing much happened with that. I mean, you could go straight down the line. There's just tons of stuff where it's pervasive and sports also.
Do you ever sleep? you know, I'm just, if ever there was anybody out there that listens to us that wondered why do we do what we do? I learned something new. I've been fascinated with my mouth. My jaw's been dropped for the last 45 seconds listening to you pulling all these names out of the air and, you know, all this stuff about sports. Folks, Crash knows a lot about a lot. And we didn't prepare for any kind of a Sports Hall of Fame lecture. He didn't research anything. This is stuff that he just knows. This is why I love speaking with him. I'm sitting at his feet I'm stupefied.
Janet, you read that exactly as I wrote it.
That's a lot of information to pull out of your brain just when you're talking about sports. Now, I know you love sports, and I know you in particular love baseball, but pulling some of those names and commissioners and remembering those events, you need to leave your brain to science.
You're right. I'm a veritable cornucopia of worthless information. That's where
I am. Well, it ain't worthless. It's fascinating, and it's interesting to see. You know, we talk about baseball, especially as being America's game, and this has been around just like hot dogs and hamburgers forever and ever. And I know that there were some things about Babe Ruth that just were not quite as savory as we would like them to be. You know, he probably drank a few beers and then hit a few home runs and, you know, went out dancing. He was not I don't know how much of a baseball player he was in other things, but he was one of the most amazing hitters ever. Yeah, I know that there were some parents that didn't like their kids looking up to Babe Ruth, but
not only was Ruth a great hitter, he started out with the Red Sox back in 1918, and he was the best pitcher in the American League at that time.
He
started out as a pitcher with the Boston Red Sox, and he was traded. You know, they talk about the ghost of Babe Ruth. The ghost of Babe Ruth comes from the Boston Red Sox because the owner of the Red Sox got in financial trouble, and he had to sell somebody, and he sold Ruth to the Yankees, and that's what started the original Yankee dynasty of the late 19. It was really around 1921, and they added Lou Gehrig to that team and a number of others, and that was called Murderers Row mid 1920s. But he originally was a great pitcher for the Boston Red Sox.
Well, those were the days when people would find it impossible to cheat in the game because so many people were watching it. But and it wasn't like they were watching it on camera. They were there watching it. They saw it with their own eyes. So was he ever accused of cheating in some way other than on his women?
Well, no, not that I know of. You know, Ruth was a phenomenon. If you look at pictures of him, look at movies of him, he had very skinny legs, but he had very strong hands and very strong upper body. He used the heaviest bat of any player in even in those days and even in the modern era when people are a lot stronger. His bat was about 3 ounces heavier than most today. Now, if you put 3 ounces on a bat that's like 39, 38 inches long, which is what he used, most players today use bats that are about 3 ounces or 4 ounces lighter and somewhere around a 34 to a 36 inch length. He used a 39, and that's that shows the power that he had. And so, you know, the old Einstein theory, force equals energy times acceleration. He was able to accelerate that heavy bat through the baseball, and that's why he was such a prodigious hitter. And not that I know of did he have any problem like that. Well, you know, one of the greatest things was the day he pointed to the outfield and said, "I'm going to hit one over center field," which he did on the next pitch. So
that's, what about Ty Cobb?
Cobb was an interesting guy. You know, he's from North Georgia. He's He was.
What was his grade point average in school?
He didn't go to. Matter of fact, he didn't grade.
I knew you'd have the right answer.
But you know, Cobb was one of the original investors in Coca-Cola. He made a lot of money as an investor in what at that time was sold for medicinal purposes in over the counter at drugstores on Ponce de Leon in Atlanta. Now there you go.
Well, you know, I'm telling you, I hope people are taking notes. This is really fascinating stuff.
He had a lifetime batting average of .367 for the Detroit Tigers. One of the greatest series of all times was in 1918 when he played against Honus Wagner. And the great poster of that day showed he and Honus Wagner shaking hands for the, I think it was, not, I'm sorry, 1919 series.
Okay, Honus Wagner is the one that everybody talks about for the baseball card, right? Was he a good player, or is he famous just because the cards were printed? He didn't like that it was with tobacco and ripped them off the market. Why would he be famous anyway? Because he was a great player.
Yeah, he would. He's considered probably one of the two or three best second basemen ever to play the game, and he has similar stats to Ty Cobb. And you're talking about the T206. 1909 T206 Honus Wagner card, which there are 21 known to exist in the country. Every year or so, you find another one coming out of some attic, sort of like a barn find, and there was one that came out in 2011. But the most famous one of those cards was originally owned by Wayne Gretzky and a guy named Nall, N-A-N-L, who started the Upper Deck Baseball Card Company. Nall got into some problems, ended up in jail. They sold that card for about $600,000 to the baseball card company. They put it as an insert into their cards for 1 year. It was, the insert card was found by a lady in Florida. She ended up putting it up for auction. It sold for $1.3 million. The most recent trade in that card was $2.85 million for that single Honus Wagner T206 1909 card.
Okay, what drives somebody to own a small piece of paper? Like a letter from President Lincoln or something with it's why. Why would somebody want to own something like that?
A scarcity is number one. Number two would be the individual that, you know, held that card in their hand, so to speak, or was a part of that card. And, you know, maybe notoriety. You know, you're known to own a Picasso or the Mona Lisa or something like that. It's, you know, I guess it's what drives anybody to be, you know, to be something different from somebody else.
That's pretty obscure, if you ask me. I mean, I've got better places to put my money, but well, yeah. I'm glad if it brings somebody pleasure, that's great.
Well, see, and that's the reason that it's not selling for $15 million is that very few people out there are willing to either have that kind of money or pony up for that particular type of asset. And you have more people who say, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Then you have, say, man, would I ever more like to have that? And I've got the money to go after it. So,
well, take Honus Wagner. Is Honus or Honus? I've always heard it Honus, but it's Honus.
I've heard both.
Okay. Well, was he a pretty clean cut guy? Was he really? Was it only because of the tobacco that he pulled it off, or was he mad at the bubblegum company, or was he, or whatever company? I guess it was a tobacco company. Was there some kind of a contract issue there, or?
Well, there's always been a contract with regard to baseball cards, and there's a lot of lore that surrounds that particular situation. But it's said that when he first found that on the back of his card was a tobacco, you had to buy a tobacco product to be able to get his card. And he said he didn't want children to have to buy tobacco, to buy cigarettes to get his picture. And so he said, stop it. And they did, but they already had so many of them out there in circulation that they very quickly became collector's items because of scarcity.
Wow. You know, it's do they have any, like, on display or at a museum or anything? Can you go and see one to even see what it looks like? How would anybody even know if they're going through their great-grandfather's box that was in the barn, the hayloft in the barn, you know, that they find something and they're not real sure what it is? How would you even know how to recognize it?
Well, going back to the first question, I think all of the ones that are known today are in private hands. They're not in public hands. But you can go online, and it's pretty easy to get the stories of all the ones that have sold in the past number of years. And then the next question, when somebody finds one, how would they know? I guess in today's society, when people find old things in attics, they always will go to some sort of dealer, or usually always, to say, what is this worth? And so these things come out. Maybe 20 years ago, they might have found one and said, I'll take it to the local baseball card shop and see what they'll give me for it. But I don't think that's the case today. And the second thing is there are very few local baseball card shops because the internet and eBay has really taken over that particular market. I've collected some of those things in times past and haven't been as active as a collector, although I still have some things today. And when I would look for a specific card, I would go into card shops when I would be out of town and thumb through things to try to find them. And sometimes I really would have trouble finding a specific thing I was looking for to complete a set. Nowadays, you can go online and I can find, for a relatively obscure card, I can find 30 people trying to sell one in various conditions at various prices in just a matter of seconds. And so that has really totally changed the collector's card market in all sports.
So back to this, the doping thing. I know that those guys back in the 20s, I'm sure that they would be spinning in their graves. I wonder if we will ever really get a grip on it, because it's kind of like hacking computers. There are guys over in Oriental countries and all over the world that just sit there going blind on their little computers trying to figure out how to break into something. So I know that they're coming up with new mixes with new chemicals and new vitamins and new different stuff to try and enhance the human body to be able to go above and beyond what it's expected to do. So that's going to keep on going. But I wonder if we're ever going to get to a place where we can feel like sports are legitimate. You know, it's like looking at the Olympics and seeing some of these little girls that you, in your heart, you're thinking, there is no way that child is 15 or 16 years old. That's an 11 or 12 year old kid up there bending around like a pretzel. And, you know, you can't, it's hard to prove the age of a child. I wonder how far people are going to go just to win.
Well, I think if you look at overall society, it's not just sports. And if you look at a bigger picture, basically it's sin. You and I have the same worldview when it comes to faith. And as long as people seek to do things differently and be better, and there's an opportunity to bend the rules and break the rules, they're going to do it simply because we live in a condition of sin. And so I don't think that there will, whenever there's a rule, whenever there's a law, somebody's going to try to break that for their own advantage. And I don't think it's going to be any different if we go on for 100 years, probably get worse. I mean, you know, if you look at the apologetics of the Christian faith, one of the key components to being able to have an effective apologetic is the second law of thermodynamics, which says that when you put a banana out on a plate, that banana doesn't get any better. It gets worse. It rots. And that's what happens to man. Man is not getting better. Sin is causing man to be further degraded.
Well, you would think that even beyond the God perspective, that people are in, I understand that we're born in sin, that we're all sinful. We have a sinful nature. We're bad to start with. But there's also a character issue. Some people do good things and they are honest and they have character and they have integrity and they are not believers. Some of those are the people that are trying to make things right.
Correct.
And I wonder if we will ever get to a place where, again, where we can look at a sport without a little bit of a jaded eye and just say, wonder, well, you look at high school, like the Newman, the Cam Newman issue. Wonder how many people are buying his dad or paying off this, or right. Wonder if he's driving a brand new car to and from school. You know, we're always going to look at it with just a little bit of suspicion. And Lance Armstrong was such a hero to so many. Now, not me. I'm like one of those mountain lions who's looking at him saying, maybe I'll use him for a little dental floss later, but that's about all. It's just something that's just not my thing, watching him ride a bike. I understand that it's a demanding, grueling sport. I just wonder if we'll ever be able to look at it and enjoy it for sport again. Or any of these sports without just suspecting something?
I think we can probably do both. I enjoy baseball. I enjoy watching sports on TV. But I still also know that you watch a football game and you know that there is there's biting going on in the huddle and, you know, all these other things. So these things are happening all the time.
Well, I know that I know some of these superhuman things are possible because we watched an 11th grader this past week on the news kick a 67-yard field goal and made it.
Unbelievable.
And that was as a junior in high school. So I'm not sure if the stars lined up, if his boot hit it exactly, his shoe hit it in the right place, if it had exactly the right tilt. I don't know what all those things that came together at one time. I don't know what they all were. Or if the coach even dared to try a 67-yard field goal because he knew this kid had the possibility in it. I don't know. So is a kid like that, do we look at him and say, okay, are you taking steroids? When can we look at it and not, you know, just judge or suspect?
That's a good question. And quite honestly, when I saw that, when you just mentioned it, that's the first time that it came into my mind that possibly he was on steroids. But I think probably we'll never get to the point where you don't question everything that happens in some way, especially as you get older and become more suspicious of human nature.
Well, I think we get suspicious because we find ourselves cheating in so many different ways, and all of us are failures. But I think when it comes to cheating and doing something wrong every single day, but I wonder when some of the failings on a national level and on a worldwide level will ever be rectified, I guess. Listening to people lie repeatedly over and over and over and swearing and really just putting their whole family, everything at stake and saying, I'm telling you the truth. I did not use steroids. I did not cheat. Of course, it sounds like our president. Yes, I did. I called it an act of terror. I mean, there's so many lies that it's almost as if the liar is just hoping that the more he says it, the more people will believe it. And in some cases, I guess it's true because Lance Armstrong got away with this from 1999 until 2005. He got away with it.
Well, he got away with it on a national basis. But what I can't understand is if so many people in the sport knew this and those he was competing against and with knew this, how in the world did it not come out for such a long period of time? I mean, he's been doing this since 1999, evidently, or even before. They also did a very laborious study on his body at some famous clinic. And I remember seeing it on the History Channel, I think it was, where they plugged him up to oxygen machines and blooding, you know, checked his blood and everything. And they said that his body was an absolute phenomenon, that he was able to rebuild. His body rebuilt itself. It produced oxygen. It used oxygen most efficiently. And they said he's just a phenomenal specimen of a human being. And I would have thought that they would have seen something that took place there. I'm not really sure what the doping was. Did he take blood out and then put blood back in? Did he use steroids? What is it that he actually did? Because they call it doping. And, you know, doping, you know horses significantly more than I do, but one of the things they do, is it not, that they take blood out of the horse and then they put it back in at the time of the race so that there's more oxygen there? Is that accurate or?
Right, and they give them lots. They give him diuretics also to pull fluid off, and it's all there's all kinds of craziness that they do, and I don't know what he was doing. I don't know if he was just chewing cinnamon sticks, and they said that was doping. I don't have any idea, but I know that whatever it was, he knew it was cheating, and the fleas that were riding on him knew it was cheating.
Yeah,
and. You know, I guess the fleas just didn't want the host to go away. So, and I guess somebody got kicked off the dog. And so now he's going to be bringing attention to the dog and saying, nope, it's not what it looks like. So yeah. Disappointing.
A couple of these guys that came forward were really upstanding guys. And one of them said, and he's been living with this for a long time, and he finally just couldn't live with himself. And I don't think he's active today in racing. And so it's not like that he wanted to bring him down so he could win.
I have a hard time with, I can't live with myself anymore thing too. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I agree. Yeah, that's probably.
And that's a little hard to swallow, but it may actually, that could be accurate. And but it's not really very much, and it's an awful lot late. So anyway, well, folks,
Before we go, let me ask you a question about the field goal thing. Do you remember who the first guy was that kicked one over 60 some odd yards?
Yes. Frank Vandeley.
Give me a break. His name was Tom Dempsey, and he was one of the original New Orleans Saints.
Good grief.
He had a foot that didn't have any toes on it. So his shoe was a special made shoe, and the front of it was flat and wide. So it was almost like he was hitting it with the backside of a wood wedge.
Or with my forehead.
Or with you for it. And so there was question as to whether he should be in the record books, because they said he had an unfair advantage because he was able to kick with that flat front foot. And that was 40 some odd years ago. I think it was back in 69 or 70 or something like that. But one of the things that made me remember it is he broke the record of one of my favorite football players, who was named Burt Rechichar, and he played with Tennessee in 1951. There you go. There's your little trivia.
Well, folks, again, is it any wonder why I enjoy speaking with Crash so much, or actually listening to Crash so very much? And I want to thank the guys at Big Brains Media. Go to bigbrainsmedia.com and send in a question or some kind of a topic that you want me to throw at Crash without giving him warning. And I guarantee you he will give you some facts that you had no idea were coming. Well, we thank our producer, J.P. Spann, and I want to thank you, Crash. It really is a pleasure to sit and listen to you, and you do wax eloquent, and I appreciate it very much. It's just a great pleasure. You have a great week.
You know, this is fun. I enjoy just talking it up. I'm so grateful to J.P. and all the people at Big Brains Media who give us an opportunity to do this. It's fun for us. Hopefully it's fun for those that listen. We would love to have people tell us what they'd like to hear. What do you not like about what we do? What do you like about what we do? So encourage us or challenge us. We're up to both. But great to be with you, Janet.
Talk to you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
This is Just Talking It Up with Janet and Crash. To send an email to Janet or Crash, the address is feedback@justtalkingitup.com.